Before I get started, just a show of hands. Is there anybody in the room who's actually purchased banner advertising? Really, nobody. All right. Well, I guess you're a very smart group. To get going, why exactly did we look into this? In the good old days, it was flat fee pop-ups was the mode of choice for advertising. You paid a fixed amount for your pop-up, and it just ran in whenever somebody came to visit the site. In the year 2000, things shifted more towards a cost per click model, which is simply money transacts hands whenever an ad gets clicked. In the last few years, the CPM advertising or display advertising has seen exponential growth. And this is not necessarily paying when the ad gets clicked, but necessarily paying just when the ad is displayed. So this is a quite different than the cost per click. It's also different more recently in that in the year 2000, things were mostly dominated by large players. So these large players had the ability and resources to combat fraud in their platform. And they certainly had the motivation, because if they didn't, they'd lose advertisers. Most recently, there's still some large players who do a very good job of this, but it's also a very fragmented market in the display space. You got a lot of small players, you got a lot of advertisers contracting directly with websites. And what this does is it takes the resources out of the picture. So you've got a lot of growth, and you've got some small players who really aren't paying attention. So this really is a pretty bad combination for the advertiser. A quick overview of how online advertising works. So what you have is you have brands who get in touch with advertisers. The advertisers are the ones who actually secure the advertising placement. They also handle a lot of the targeting as well as campaign flight information. Advertisers may work with more than one intermediary. So intermediaries kind of solve one of the pieces of the advertising puzzle. Some low-level examples are either ad servers or ad exchanges. There's also high-level examples, which are kind of data intermediaries. So you can buy information about users or buy information about certain websites in order to increase the effectiveness of your advertising. And then finally, publishers are the ones who actually own the websites. These websites have unique and novel content that draw users in. And publishers are the ones getting paid every time a user comes to their website. The thing to notice here in the display world, publishers and intermediaries get paid every time an impression is shown. So really, their goal is to maximize the number of impressions that they can display and therefore make as much money as they can. So there's huge incentive here for them to participate in fraud. Obviously, online advertising faces a multitude of threats. I'll highlight a few of them here. The simple threats are kind of script-based page retrieval. You can think of wget scripts or maybe Selenium. Or if you're non-technical, you can download a ton of programs that'll do this for you. If you're really lazy, you can pay somebody to do it for you. For about $12, you can get 10,000 of these low-quality ad views. The next threat category is the Mechanical Turk. So in this case, there's actually people that get paid to view ads. This is what they do for a living. They come into the office, they fire up their browser, they look at ads, they click on some of them. The next threat category is the kind of more complex threats. An example here is the botnet. These are highly motivated and highly sophisticated attackers that have the express goal of defrauding advertisers of as much money as they can. So, you expect a lot more features with this, and that's what you get. They have the ability to geo-target certain areas. So you can say you want your ads viewed by people in the United States. You can also, get clicks. So, they can click on your ad a certain percentage of the time, or given a certain distribution, they can do that for you. As with anything else, a little bit of quality brings a little bit more cost. For 10,000 of these higher quality fraudulent ad views, you end up paying about $100. And then the last category is what we discovered with our work and what the focus of this talk will be, which is the pay-per-view network. And a pay-per-view network is a website or a collection of websites that actually will load a third-party website when accessed by an end user. And I'll get into that in a little bit. So if you're a website publisher, there's a number of options that you have for drawing traffic to your website. The first one and most obvious is search engine optimization, so increase your ranking in the search results. You'll draw more users. Clearly legitimate and illegitimate options when it comes to SEO. There's also a multitude of legitimate advertising forms. So you can go buy some display ads for your website. You can purchase an AdWords campaign so you get the sponsored search results. There's also a number of content widgets. So these are the related or around the web boxes that you often see. So it's a kind of like one large ad that usually gets shown below a news article. So you can put your website in one of those content widgets. The other option is kind of the more illegitimate means, is you could just go looking to purchase traffic. And you know, a quick search for the purchasing website traffic will return hundreds of people willing to help you out. You know, there's so many different companies that'll do this. They each have their own set of options. Again, we see geotargeting. So you can purchase website visitors from a certain geographic region. And they also make strong guarantees about the uniqueness of their users. And just really quickly, the differentiation here is that you're not purchasing the potential to be viewed. You're actually purchasing users. You're not displaying an ad. These users are just getting directed to your website. And that's what kind of makes it illegitimate. So to begin our investigation, we looked into 34 of these websites. So we just reviewed the actual websites. First thing you notice is they all make extremely strong guarantees that the users they're delivering are completely legitimate. And by no means are they using any kind of black hat method to trick people into visiting your website. The next thing you notice is a lot of these sites looked awfully similar to each other. Similar layouts, similar FAQ sections. Diving a little bit deeper, the DNS registrations typically were registered to the same people. So we'd see one entity with five or six different of these traffic generation services registered to it. Also sharing of Google Analytics tags. On the extreme end, there's actually one company out there that will set up you up a traffic generation web store for a certain fee. You just supply the domain name and a bit of marketing, and away you go. So to look into this, we set up some honeypot websites. Our honeypot websites were intended to have the look and feel of actual websites. What we did is we used news aggregation. This helped keep the content of the websites fresh and also gave them a realistic look. We set the noindex, nofollow robots.txt, so any users arriving at these websites, most likely there because are doing, not necessarily just organic traffic coming from search engines. And then the final thing we did is we instrumented these websites as best possible. So we tracked when the users arrived, we tracked when the ads began loading, we tracked when the ads finished loading, and then we also tracked clicks and mouse movements while on our honeypot websites. So with the honeypot set up, we went and we did a little shopping. So we identified five traffic generation services that we purchased traffic from. And we made these traffic purchases with the intent of maximizing diversity. So we picked five that did not appear to be replicates of each other. And we also picked five at different price points and campaign lengths. When we made the purchases, we were indicated that we wanted only US-based traffic. And then all of the five guaranteed us that over a single 24-hour period, we'd only receive unique users. So as the traffic started rolling in, the first thing we looked at was the time series of the arrivals, and that's what we have in front of us. The x-axis is time. The y-axis is number of ad impressions in five-minute bins. And you know, here we were really expecting to see the traditional internet diurnal cycle of a couple of spikes throughout the day and the trough overnight as users log off. You can see what we actually got was quite different. Build traffic, most of their traffic was delivered in the first 5 minutes of the hour, whereas Traffic Masters delivered their traffic in two large bursts. Clearly, a number of observations that we can make about this, some of the highlighted ones here. Out of the 110,000 impressions or visitors that we had purchased from these traffic generation sources, only 69,000 were actually delivered. Build traffic, they only gave us 28 days of the 60-day campaign. And AE traffic actually bucked the trend. They sent us more than double what we purchased from them, and they just kept going. And then bulk by visitor, they only delivered a single user out of the 20,000 that we had purchased from them. So the next thing we looked into is the source IPs of people visiting our honeypot websites. And we compared these source IPs with publicly available IP blacklists, so either spam or malware blacklists, and really didn't see much of an overlap between the two. The next observation is these users that came into the honeypot really weren't interacting with our website at all. They weren't moving their mouse, they certainly weren't clicking on the website in any fashion. And the next thing we looked at was the IP reuse. What we expected to see is kind of a smaller subset of IPs. In reality, it was a rather diverse sampling of IPs that they were using. So in reality, it seemed like they were truthful when they guaranteed us those unique users over a 24-hour period. The next observation is that the ad loads on the page were rather inconsistent. So we placed 4 ads on the page, and what we saw is that the first ad was loaded most of the time, but as you move down the ad or down the page, the ads became less and less prevalently loaded, almost as if the users were canceling the load as it was happening, or potentially timing out for some reason. And then the last thing we looked at was the referrer string, so we could see where these users were coming from. We popped those windows open in our own browsers and saw what was going on. As we expected, there was a query parameter, which was our site, and our site was loaded in 100% of the viewport. What we also noticed is that a number of other sites were loaded in invisible frames. So these are either frames with zero height or zero width that possibly couldn't be seen by any users, but in fact they were loading full third-party websites. So looking at what the goal of these traffic generation services is, you know, they want to deliver real users, or at least something that appears to be a real user, and they want to do it at the lowest cost that they can with the most number of features that they can offer. We were really wondering how they accomplished this. Well, to our benefit and our luck, a number of these guys will actually sign you up as a publisher. So instead of taking their traffic, you can give them traffic. So in exchange for running some JavaScript on your web page, what they actually will do is pay you a pretty heavy price for every user that runs that JavaScript that you drop on your web page. And they guarantee you that this JavaScript won't obstruct your web page, or it won't draw users away from your web page. It'll just load some third-party websites. And this is our definition of the pay-per-view network, is a groups of websites that are running an individual traffic generation services set of tags. So looking into these pay-per-view networks in a little more detail, we popped open the tags, and when you run them, what they actually do is they'll create a pop-under window. So a pop-under window is very similar to the pop-up window of the 90s, except for it's hidden behind the current browser window. So it's completely there. It's entirely visible. If you closed out your current browser, it would be the next in line to be displayed. It's just not seen until the current browser is closed. It's loaded on the response of a user action. This is just an artifact of the way browsers defend against pop-up windows. So this pop-under window, when it loads, what it does is it contacts the pay-per-view network, and it asks for a list of URLs that it should display. This is where the pay-per-view network can direct the traffic, and presumably this is where they use the 24-hour unique guarantee to apply. So given that list of URLs that comes back from the pay-per-view network, it gets loaded in that pop-under window. And you notice I said URLs, not URL. You know, we already talked about the invisible viewports and multiple frames. We also saw judicious use of meta refresh. So you can imagine the number of users that you can deliver if you have a hidden or a obscured window that's refreshing itself every 15 seconds. So obviously cool stuff. The next question we had is, you know, how prevalent is this? Is this a real problem? Lucky for us, a lot of these pay-per-view networks actually self-report statistics. So out of the guys that do, we found that on average 17 million unique visitors and 6 billion page views per day could be provided. So that's a pretty significant number, but we don't know if they're telling the truth. It could be selection bias. There could be network overlap. So we really wanted to, you know, sample this ourselves and figure out if they're telling the truth. So what we did is we collected 10 of these pay-per-view tags. We collected these tags by either signing up as publishers, or we collected these tags by scraping web forums to try to identify people asking for help with the tag. Given these 10 tags, we wanted to see where they're deployed on the internet. Luckily for us, the Common Crawl Foundation out of California publishes an annual web crawl that's accessible to the public. So what we did is we looked in that web crawl and we identified every case that we found our 10 pay-per-view tags. And actually there was 4 million different pages running these tags across 11,000 different domains. So again, pretty significant amount just for these 10 pay-per-view networks. Next step was figuring out how much traffic these 11,000 domains are seeing. To do that, we looked into MuStat. So MuStat's an online traffic estimation tool. Given a domain, it'll estimate how many users that domain sees. So what we got is 168 million page views a day of domains that are running these pay-per-view tags. So pretty significant number, but really didn't register with us. It wasn't a dollar amount. So what we wanted to do is really come up with how much is this costing. To do that, we had to make a couple assumptions. The first assumption is that 25% of pop under windows are going to fail to load. So, you know, it's not going to work 100% of the time. People are running pop-up blockers. They might be running ad block. They also might just have a weird browser that doesn't work right with the JavaScript. So there's some attrition there. The next thing we assumed is that for every pop under window that successfully loads, let's assume it is able to deliver a user to four different sites. So there's four destinations. Again, pretty conservative. We saw this quite a bit more in the wild. And the last assumption we made is that of sites receiving traffic, we assume they ran four ads on the landing page. These four ads probably aren't very high quality traffic, so the advertisers aren't going to pay much. So our assumption was that 25 cents for every 1,000 impressions is what they're getting paid. So out of all this, we got $15 million a month was wasted in ad spend just from the 10 pay-per-view network providers that we investigated. And this is basically how much they made. So if you figure you had to pay all the intermediaries and all the advertisers on top of that, the actual brands were quite a bit more. So pretty bad for the brands. Luckily, there's a couple things you can do. The first thing you can do is you can start checking for zero-sized iframes or frames. So when you display an ad, typically a little block of JavaScript runs. This block of JavaScript might collect a little bit of information about the user. It probably sets a cache breaker. So what you could do is you could augment that JavaScript and just have it check and make sure there's a iframe that's large enough to fill your ad. If it's not, don't display an ad. Don't waste money advertising to that user. And in our case, this would have blocked 46% of the traffic that we had purchased through our traffic generation purchases. Next mitigation we have is the referrer blacklist. So in our case, the five traffic generation services had very distinct, unique referrer strings. So you could, in the same way, you augment the JavaScript and check the referrer. If the user has a referrer that's been known to be participating in a pay-per-view network, simply don't provide them an ad. Again, pretty effective in our purchases. This would have blocked 99% of ad views from our purchase traffic. And the last mitigation we have is the publisher blacklist. So what this is we can collect a bunch of URLs that are being loaded by pop under windows, and we can just repeatedly load them and see which ads get or which sites get displayed in the pop under window. So what we can do is enumerate a list of publishers that are receiving pay-per-view traffic, and then we can hand that list over to advertisers and allow them to add it to their block list, so making sure they're not displaying ads on these sites that are participating in pay-per-view networks. So that saves the advertisers money immediately, but also more interestingly, it creates an incentive for the publishers and websites to behave correctly, because they don't want to get added to the publisher blacklist. So I guess in summary, you know, we've discovered a pretty significant amount of money being wasted by just 10 bad actors, and we're sure this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more going on here. This is just one modality of fraud in online advertising. We're continuing our HoneyNet gathering processes. Every day we're learning something different. There definitely is a good diversity of suppliers out there when it comes to traffic generation. MDOT Labs has created a traffic quality platform that can identify fraudulent ad views when they take place. So we can classify traffic for either ads, the ad placements, or websites. And then also MDOT Labs is developing an experimental platform to help facilitate data sharing amongst researchers. So we want to make this as open as possible. And clearly there's a whole bunch of other directions that we can go with online advertising fraud. So thank you, and I want to just point out that I did put my email address up on here. It's a huge problem. We're just getting into this. It's going to take a lot of people working, a lot of hard work to get this solved. So if you have any interest in chatting, feel free to leave me an email. We're more than willing to help out and see if we can solve some tough problems together. So thank you.
We have lots of time for questions, so please step up to the microphone and state your name and affiliation.
Hi, I'm Jack Johnson from MarkMonitor. I was curious, did you capture any information about the type of sites that the ads were displayed on? Did they fall into like general categories, or was it like all over the place?
That's a great question. It really was all over the place. Typically, they're rather low quality sites. I mean, any site that's on its own making money, it has just doesn't have the incentive. It's not worth the risk. So what we saw is a lot of these sites that have maybe like one blog post, and they'll buy traffic and get it in and sell it to their advertisers, but they really don't have any content to them. Sure.
Hi. Waymo from Georgia Tech. So I have some ethical concerns. So can you report how much money did you get paid from those ad intermediaries by using those purchased traffic? So I mean, isn't it violating some policies of the ad intermediaries?
Sure,
how do you solve that?
Sure. Yeah, we're an advertiser network, so we displayed our own ads. So we didn't actually display any third-party ads at all. This was house ads that we were just showing to these guys. So we basically footed the bill for the intermediaries ourselves.
Hi, Paul Pierce, UC Berkeley. You talked in the paper a little bit about like how the percentage of ads that were loaded, so essentially impressions. I'm curious, of those, how many resulted in clicks?
None.
Oh, okay.
I mean, certainly the ones, the traffic generation services that we provided or that we purchased from, they didn't offer clicks. And, okay. You know, they know that people aren't watching at all, so they don't do any more than they need to. But okay. Others certainly, for an extra fee, they'll happily click on an ad as much as you want.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Niels Provost, Google. So you mentioned some fairly straightforward techniques to identify this kind of impression spamming. So I would imagine that many of the major advertising platforms would already have defenses like that in place. Can you speak at all to how effective this technique is for the people who end up buying the impressions?
Sure. I think it kind of gets back to that early slide in that a lot of the advertisers and intermediaries don't necessarily have the incentive to prevent this. I mean, it's not that they want it to go on. They just don't have the resources to invest in research to find these defenses. So I think after this talk, hopefully a lot of them will add that to their JavaScript and prevent things. But up until now, it's a simple thing that nobody knew. So.
Any more questions? If not, then let's thank the speaker again.